Ever feel like you're pouring your heart and soul into something just to be told it's all going to fail?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's exactly what the prophet Isaiah is up against.
Yeah.
And today we are going deep into his story, and we've got a lecture from Dr. Marv Wilson to help us along the way.
Awesome.
So get ready for some surprising connections to our lives today.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that just really sticks with you, even though it was written thousands of years ago.
Right.
We're going to be looking at select passages from the book of Isaiah, focusing on the dramatic way he's called by God,
Right. The
difficult message he's given, and the state of the people he's sent to.
So Dr. Wilson, he points out this three-part structure to Isaiah's call in chapter 6.
Okay.
First, he sees God in this incredible vision.
Right.
Which actually leads to the second part, seeing himself.
Yeah.
And he doesn't exactly come away feeling confident, does he?
Not at all. His reaction is pretty dramatic. Woe is me. I am ruined.
Wow.
And you get the sense that being confronted with God's holiness, it really throws Isaiah's own flaws into sharp relief.
It's like that saying, the closer you are to the light, the more you see your own darkness.
Oh, that's good.
But then there's that crucial step of cleansing and consecration.
Yeah.
God doesn't leave Isaiah in that state of despair.
Right. It's almost like God is saying, I see your imperfections and I also see your potential.
Right.
I'm going to equip you for this. And that's where we get that powerful Hebrew word, hein.
Right.
Here I am.
Yeah.
Which is way more than just saying, okay, I'll do it.
Is total surrender a willingness to be used despite the cost?
Absolutely.
Which makes the actual mission all the more intriguing, because Dr. Wilson points out that Isaiah is basically told, go deliver this message that most people will reject.
Oh, wow.
Talk about setting someone up for a rough time.
Yeah. Knowing that his message would be rejected, why do you have God still chose Isaiah for this?
Hmm.
Is there something about failure itself that serves a purpose? What's fascinating is how that resistance to truth is actually woven into the very language of Isaiah 6.9-10.
You're talking about that mirroring effect, the chiasm.
Why, right. Actually.
Be ever hearing but never understanding, otherwise they may see with their eyes.
Yes.
It's like the text itself is reflecting their closed-off hearts.
Exactly. It emphasizes their deliberate choice to block out what they don't want to hear. And Dr. Wilson is very clear that Isaiah's preaching isn't the cause of this hardness of heart.
Okay.
It's simply revealing what's already there.
Okay.
Like shining a light into a dusty room, you suddenly see all the grime that was always present.
So it's not about Isaiah making people stubborn.
Right.
But exposing a pre-existing condition.
Yeah.
And I guess that leads to his question, how long, Lord?
Yeah.
Can you imagine pouring your heart into something knowing most people won't listen?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about disheartening.
It's a cry of both exhaustion and bewilderment. But even in this bleakness, Dr. Wilson uncovers that glimmer of hope.
Yes.
The remnant theme.
Right.
Even if the majority turns away, God promises a faithful few will survive.
That image of the tree stump really sticks with you, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It signifies not just destruction, but the potential for future growth. This theme echoes throughout Scripture, and it's even embodied in the name of Isaiah's own son, Shear-Jashub.
Oh, wow.
A remnant will return.
It's a powerful reminder that even when things seem hopeless, God is always at work.
Always.
And speaking of things seeming hopeless,
yeah.
Dr. Wilson takes us to Isaiah chapter 1,
okay.
Where the tone shifts drastically. He uses this courtroom analogy to describe God's charges against Judah.
Yeah, and remember, the witness to all this is creation itself.
Wow.
Hear, O heavens, listen, O earth. And this isn't some minor scolding.
I know.
It's a full-blown indictment.
What strikes me is how this mirrors Micah 6, where God puts his people on trial in a similar way.
Right.
That repetition really drives home the seriousness of the situation.
Absolutely. It's like, okay, you've been warned. This is a pattern. And Dr. Wilson lays out these three key charges.
Okay.
Rebellion, ignorance, and an unfaithfulness. Each one cutting to the core of their relationship with God.
And the way he unpacks these charges is so vivid. Like when he talks about rebellion.
Yeah.
He uses that Hebrew word pasha, meaning to deliberately go against authority.
Right.
It's like they're saying, we're dethroning God. We'll do things our way.
Hmm.
And that connects to how we sometimes try to dethrone God in our own lives today.
Right. We think we know better, that our desire should come first. And then there's that poignant comparison he makes about ignorance.
Yes.
An ox knows its master. A donkey knows its owner's manger. But Israel does not know. My people do not understand.
Wow.
Even animals get it. But God's chosen people are clueless.
It's like they've become so lost, they can't even recognize their own brokenness.
Yeah.
Which is where Dr. Wilson uses that very visceral language to describe their state. Wounds and welts and open sores, not cleansed or bandaged.
Yeah.
It's like a physical manifestation of their spiritual condition.
And he connects that back to the suffering servant of Isaiah 53.
Right.
While ultimately pointing to Jesus, the idea of bearing the weight of others' wrongdoing applies to Israel as a whole here. They're a nation wounded by its own sin.
And it's interesting how Dr. Wilson brings in that bit about olive oil.
Yeah.
Knowing it was used for so much in ancient Israel.
Uh-huh.
From healing to ritual makes those unsoothed wounds even more significant. Like they're missing the very thing that could bring restoration.
It's a really powerful image, and it sets up the next part of Isaiah's message where he lays out what they need to do about all this. But before we get there, let's pause for a moment.
Okay.
What stands out to you so far?
Honestly, it's that tension between human stubbornness and God's persistent grace.
Yeah.
Even though Isaiah knows his message will be largely rejected, there's still that glimmer of hope in the remnant.
Right.
It makes you wonder, what does it take to be part of that faithful few?
That's a great question to ponder, and it leads us right into the next section where Dr. Wilson explores God's call to action and how that call is as relevant for us today as it was for Isaiah's original audience. It's interesting, isn't it, how Dr. Wilson uses that image of bloodstained hands at the end of chapter 1?
Yeah.
Such a stark symbol of Judah's wrongdoing.
Right.
But then he immediately shifts to this message of hope.
Right. It's not like God is dwelling on their guilt.
No.
He's saying, okay, you've messed up. Now what are you going to do about it?
Exactly. And Dr. Wilson highlights the very next verse.
Okay.
Where God says, "Wash and make yourselves clean. Take your evil deeds out of my sight. Stop doing wrong."
Wow.
It's not just about feeling bad.
Right.
It's about taking action to change your behavior.
It's a call to repentance.
Uh-huh.
But not just the inward kind. Dr. Wilson connects this to the concept of social justice.
Absolutely. He points to verse 17 where God says, "Learn to do right, seek justice, defend the oppressed, take up the cause of the fatherless, plead the case of the widow." It's like saying, if you're truly sorry, show me. Let your actions reflect that change of heart.
So true repentance has to have a real-world impact, especially on those who are most vulnerable.
Yeah.
It can't just be about personal piety.
Right. And this idea of seeking justice becomes a major theme throughout Isaiah. Dr. Wilson points out how it connects back to that concept of pasha we talked about earlier, that
right.
deliberate rebellion against God's authority.
Because by ignoring the needs of the oppressed, you're essentially saying, my comfort and my power are more important than doing what's right.
Exactly. It's like creating your own little kingdom where you get to decide whose lives matter.
Right.
But God is calling them back to his kingdom.
Right.
Where justice and righteousness reign.
Okay, but going back to Isaiah's original audience.
Yeah.
How would they have heard this message? Was social justice something people even talked about back then?
That's a great question. And Dr. Wilson does address that. He talks about how the concept of justice in ancient Israel was deeply tied to their covenant with God.
Okay.
It wasn't just some abstract ideal.
Yeah.
It was the very foundation of their society.
So by calling them to seek justice, God was reminding them of their core identity.
Right.
Who they were supposed to be as a people.
Exactly. It was a call to get back to their roots, to live out the values they claim to believe in. And that's a powerful message for us today, too.
Right.
What are the roots we're neglecting?
Yeah.
How are we failing to live out the values we say we hold dear?
So much to think about. But one thing that's really sticking with me is how Dr. Wilson keeps weaving together these different threads.
Yeah.
The personal and the social judgment and hope. Even that courtroom imagery from chapter 1.
Right.
It's like he's helping us see how all these pieces fit together.
He's a master at connecting those dots, isn't he?
Yes.
And it makes Isaiah's message feel so much richer.
It's not just a list of rules or predictions.
Right.
It's a tapestry of God's heart for his people.
And that heart is full of both righteous anger at their wrongdoing.
Right.
Yeah. And this incredible longing for them to return to him. That's what makes Isaiah's message so compelling.
Yeah.
It's not sugar-coated, but it's always pointing towards the possibility of redemption.
Which brings us back to that remnant theme. If God's ultimate desire is restoration,
right.
How does the idea of a faithful few play into that? Is it like a seed that will eventually sprout and bring new life?
That's a beautiful way to put it. And Dr. Wilson touches on that very idea. He talks about how the remnant, though small,
yeah,
carries the potential for future growth and transformation.
It's like they become the guardians of God's promises, keeping that ember of hope alive, even in the darkest of times.
And that connects to something else Dr. Wilson mentions, the idea that the remnant doesn't just sit around waiting for things to get better.
Okay.
They're actively working to make things better to bring about the change they long to see.
They're embodying that call to action, that pursuit of justice.
Exactly. And in doing so, they become a light for others, a testament to the power of faithfulness, even in the face of overwhelming odds. Which, when you think about it, is a pretty amazing message of hope, wouldn't you say?
It is. It reminds me of that line from a poem. There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
Oh, I like that.
Even in the midst of brokenness, there's always potential for something new to emerge.
That's a perfect way to capture the essence of what we've been exploring.
Yeah.
Because even though Isaiah is dealing with some pretty heavy themes,
right,
judgment, rebellion, the consequences of sin,
yeah,
there's this persistent undercurrent of hope running through it all.
And that hope is rooted not just in God's promises, but in the faithfulness of those who choose to align themselves with his purposes, even when it's hard.
And Dr. Wilson suggests that maybe, just maybe, that's where we come in.
Right.
We're invited to be part of that remnant.
Right.
To be those cracks of light in a world that desperately needs it.
That's a powerful challenge to leave our listener with. But before we go, I have to ask you about something Dr. Wilson mentions that really intrigued me. He says the phrase "Holy One of Israel" is almost unique to Isaiah. What do you think is the significance of that?
Now, that's a question worth pondering.
It is.
Why might Isaiah, out of all the prophets, emphasize this particular aspect of God's character? What does it reveal about the specific message he was called to deliver? Perhaps it's a clue to understanding the deeper meaning of his prophecy.
And maybe, just maybe, it's a clue to understanding our own call to be a part of God's redemptive work in the world today. We'll leave our listener with that thought. You know, it's amazing how Dr. Wilson ties together that idea of the remnant with this call to action. They're not just passively waiting
right.
for God to fix everything.
Right. It's like they become these little pockets of resistance
yes.
against the prevailing tide of corruption and injustice.
And it makes you think about how we could be that kind of remnant today.
Yeah.
What does it look like to stand up for what's right, even when it feels like everyone else is going the other way?
That's such an important question. And Dr. Wilson gives us some clues. He points back to that passage in Isaiah 1, where God lays out those specific actions. Seeking justice, defending the oppressed, taking up the cause of the vulnerable.
It's a reminder that true faithfulness isn't just about avoiding bad stuff.
Right.
It's about actively pursuing good.
Exactly. And that pursuit often requires courage. It means stepping outside our comfort zones, challenging the status quo.
Right.
Maybe even risking our own security or reputation.
Which is probably why Isaiah's message was so hard for his original audience to hear.
Yeah.
It wasn't just about tweaking their religious practices.
No.
It was about a fundamental shift in how they live their lives.
Right. It was about aligning their actions with their beliefs, letting their faith have a real impact on the world around them.
Right.
And that's still a challenge for us today, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's easy to get caught up in our own little bubbles.
Yeah.
To focus on our own personal growth and forget about the bigger picture.
And that's where Dr. Wilson's insights about the remnant are so helpful. It's not just about individual transformation. It's about collective action working together to bring about the kind of world God desires.
Like those cracks of light we talked about.
Yeah.
Multiplying and spreading until the darkness is pushed back.
What a beautiful image. And it reminds me of something else Dr. Wilson touches on.
Yeah.
The idea that even small acts of faithfulness can have a ripple effect. We may never see the full impact of our choices.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they don't matter.
It's like planting a seed. You don't know exactly what will grow or how long it will take. But you trust that the potential is there.
And you nurture that potential with everything you've got. You water it, you protect it, you give it the space to grow.
Which brings us back to that question we posed earlier. What does it take to be part of that faithful remnant? Maybe it starts with simply being willing to show up to say, "Hein."
Yeah.
Here I am, Lord, use me.
And to trust that even if our efforts seem small,
right,
even if we experience setbacks or failures,
right,
God can still use them for good.
Like that tree stump, seemingly dead, but still holding the possibility of new life. It's a message of hope that resonates deeply, especially in times like these.
Absolutely. Isaiah's message may have been delivered thousands of years ago, but its relevance for us today is undeniable. It challenges us to confront our own complacency.
Right.
To step outside our comfort zones.
Right.
And to join God in the ongoing work of bringing justice and healing to a broken world.
It's a call to action that's both daunting and inspiring. And maybe that's the point. It's supposed to push us beyond our perceived limitations.
Yeah.
To embrace the possibility that we can be part of something bigger than ourselves.
And that even in the midst of darkness and despair, there's always reason to hope. Because God is still at work, and he's still inviting us to join him.
What a powerful way to wrap up this deep dive. I hope our listeners walking away feeling challenged, encouraged, and maybe even a little bit fired up to make a difference.
Me too. And if you're feeling that spark of inspiration, I encourage you to revisit those passages in Isaiah for yourself. Let the words sink in and see what fresh insights God might have for you today.
Because as we've seen, even ancient texts can speak to our modern lives in powerful and unexpected ways. Thanks for joining us on this journey, and we see you next time for another deep dive into the world of ideas that matter.